You are now listening to the Arts Indie Crossroads Show. Here's Suk-Yen Lee, host for CBC's Definitely Not the Opera and former VJ for Much Music.
I just Googled Nick Panu online, and I'm just trying to get a visual image of this person I'm talking to, you.
You can go to
you're
YouTube.
You're in a room pretending you're Marlon Brando, and you're asleep on your... You're asleep on your laptop.
One Gero, Stargate Atlantis.
Nick, and if you personally keep supporting the film like you have, then it'll all go great. So thanks again.
Gary Chalk.
Voice of Optimus Prime.
Transform and roll out.
You know, culture and art and expression are fundamental to that essence of life.
It does take some strength, and it does take the skin of a rhino sometimes. You know, it's worth it. It really is. It's worth it.
Film, theater, music, the arts. Coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM and online at www.cjsf.ca. Following
Folk the Man
with Carly Levitt. And Alex Hallbaum.
I'm Nick. I'll be your host for this hour of the Arts Indie Crossroads Show. Oh yeah, a reminder that this coming Saturday, April the 5th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Scottish Cultural Center, there will be the Pop Culture Collectibles event happening. That's on 886 Hudson Street in Vancouver. That's the Scottish Cultural Center, 886 Hudson Street. And it's pretty cool because there's a whole bunch of artsy stuff there. You'll be able to find actually a whole bunch of things. Rare toys, memorabilia, new cards, and current and vintage comics. Like, I've been there, a whole section on comics. Early DC and Marvel, coins, action figures, and crafts, Transformers, Star Wars, collectibles, wrestling, boxing, Hot Wheels, 8-track tapes, die-cast models, and we mentioned the crafts, so, you know, a lot of things to do with art in general. There'll be jewelry, movies. I've been able to find some pretty good selection of independent films. Pop culture collectibles, there's video games, records, CDs, DVDs, and all kinds of collectibles. It's hard to get your hands on those things these days, DVDs and CDs, so check it out. Part of this pop cultural collectibles that'll be happening at the Scottish Cultural Center on April the 5th is the Saturday is... Collectibles Fair and Computer Swap Meet. It's affordable and a fun day for an entire family. There will be a great selection of dealers carrying electronics, computer items, printers, monitors, cell phones, memory, and more. So, as well as like the artsy things, you have this also happening as well. So check that out. It's coming April the 5th, right? It's a Saturday. Yeah, that's right. April the 5th on a Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Scottish Cultural Center. That's a pop culture collectible. And also this coming April the 5th on the Saturday, a big event at the UFE Student Society. That's the Fraser Valley University Student Society. $8 at the door, and I believe free for Student Society members. The Juno and Polaris nominees, the bands Lamb of God and Sepultura. They're Abbotsford Zone, Kyle Shields and Ruben H. And also Vancouver's White Lung and Toronto's Grays, the band from Alberta. There's going to be a spoken word, actually, at this event also. And post-hardcore songwriting. it's going to be a great event. Check it out. That's from 7 to 10 on April the 5th in the evening time at UFE campus in the Fraser Valley. Yeah, Juno and Polaris nominees. The band's headlining this event are Lamb of God and Sepultura. In a second. Also, yeah, Mike Bennett sent me a link, and let me just read it for you here. Oh, so Mike Bennett says he has an amazing opportunity to become executive producer on I Heart Magnum, the ultimate New Year's resolution. So, yeah, this is the link he's giving me. http://tinyurl. That's tin the way tinyurl.com. This is not an easy link to remember. Anyways, no, I'll start over again. So it's http://. Okay, tiny, the way it's spelt the way it sounds, and then url.com/. Is that a? Yeah, I guess it's a LLE2ZTJ. Well, it's not an easy link to remember. Anyways, just go to iHeartMagnum. I love Magnum on YouTube. And you wanted me to mention this link. It's about funding for his film, and he's got a lot of prospects, backers for this, producers. It's about him playing Magnum PI. So I gave that link, and also plug for the Academy Award winning short that screened at the Celluloid Social Club last Wednesday. Wow, what a inspiring film. The Lady in Number 6, executive producer Tim Marlowe was a special guest. Wow, what a profound film. It very inspiring. The lady, a musician, a classical musician, 110, she died last year at the age of 110 when she was being interviewed for this documentary. Amazing, amazing, profound human being. She was 107, 108, 109. She survived the Nazi concentration camp along with her 5-year-old son at the time. She was 39 years old when she went in the concentration camp. She was famous, kind of known in Czechoslovakia, Prague, as a musician. She'd been practicing for a young age, and as well as her husband was known in the city they were in. And then all of a sudden, just like that, you know, one morning, one afternoon, I can't remember when the Germans came in, but yeah, you know, if you look at history, you know, they just came into Prague. They walked right in to Prague, and everything changed gradually, then very quickly. And yeah, we all know that part of history that is kind of hard to forget, but just make sure it's something like that's never repeated again. It's so inspiring. The Lady in Number 6 is on Netflix, and it's also available on DVD. So really search and hunt for the links online. I'll email Paul Armstrong to see if there's more direct link to give you more information next week. Well, it definitely is on Netflix, but the DVDs are also available. The producer, Tim Marlowe, yeah, so they won an Academy Award for this short film. It was up to an hour, right? But it was still in the short film category. Great documentary. He was great. He's actually local from Vancouver. And you're going to be hearing more about him, because obviously with this Academy Award, a lot of doors have opened for him. He was already producing a lot, involved in the industry. But he's from Vancouver. He grew up here and involved for years in the independent scene. And now he's... yeah, really, things have happened. Oh yeah, and the big news is Clouds of Analog will be performing this April 5th at Rogers Arena for the Canucks game. This is amazing. Things have really taken off for the band. And they're the finalists or semi-finalists for the Settler Launch Project. That's on April the 12th. Wow, they really blew. Robin Young, who's a lead singer for Clouds of Analog and his band, yeah, they really blew everyone away the last night they performed. Yeah, I've known Robin for a couple of years. I knew him when he was a solo artist. That's when I first brought him into CGSF then for an interview. When I had the Jambalaya, he did a live set acoustic. And then any show he had, I just showed up. And then he was in a band called Darker the Sky, and which is pretty much the same as Clouds of Analog. All I know is Chris is not on drums anymore, Chris Wierenke. But I think everybody else is the same except for Chris and maybe one other person in the band. But wow, new tracks they've had out. I'm going to be playing a couple of them. I was just actually going to look that up. Hold on one sec. So much to do. So seeing how much time we have in the program, I would like to play three tracks. I'll try it. We should be able to fit at least two into the show, but what I have downloaded is Lately, Alone, and In Dying Light. You can go to YouTube, Clouds of Analog, and Robin has the page up there. So you're going to hear, that's Robin Young and Clouds of Analog. They've gotten great reviews in the past when they switched over from Darker the Sky to Clouds of Analog in the West Ender and the Georgia Strait. Yeah, Robin really stuck with it all these years, and things are really happening. That's awesome. So for all you haters out there, hey, that's too bad, because Robin really paid his dues. And there were times when there were only seven. Sometimes, you know, things go up and down, and, you know, putting on a show and there were only seven people showing up. Yeah, like I said, the launch project a few weeks ago at the Cellar, it was just jam-packed with people. Yeah, Robin's going places. He's playing the Rogers Arena. Yeah. And so the interview I have is with, when Robin's band Clouds of Analog was Darker the Sky, and Chris Wierenke was the drummer at the time, and there was one other member they had that is not there now. But anyways, that's an older interview. And then also today we have, this is a pretty long intro for the Arts and the Crossroads show. And also interview with, activists in the downtown east side, Ludwig Saliski, doing his thing. We have another interview. Yeah, like we talked first a few weeks ago about his new proposal for his new SRO. And we talk about that again, his new profit and SRO. Go into more detail, talking about harm reduction, why it doesn't work, and he won't be having that in his new nonprofit, and his whole thing about having a daycare in there, and his kitchen. He's still working on getting board of directors, but a lot of people have jumped on board. He posted it on the internet and from abroad, and a lot of people want to get funding for this project. So I'm going to be talking to Lou. Actually, we're going to be talking to Lou first, and then we'll play a track or two from Robin and Clouds of Analog. Then go to an old interview when Clouds of Analog was Darker the Sky. So check them out. I don't know if you'll be able to make the Canucks game, but that's the April the 5th. And then the next following week, April the 12th, they'll be playing at the Cellar Launch Project. I don't know what stage it is at right now. I should know. Either they're the finalists in the final or semifinalists. Well, anyways, we're going to get started this interview with Ludwig Saliski.
Well, listeners, we tracked him down. He's a busy man doing a lot here in the downtown east side. Ludwig Saliski, Lou, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Keeping busy, as you know. I'm starting a new organization called Home for the Homeless. We're still trying to register our name. I've been having various meetings regarding what I'm trying to implicate in the downtown east side. What I'm trying to do is trying to get housing for the working poor and the working homeless poor. Due to the fact that all these nonprofit organizations, or most of them, I should say, are strictly designed for people that are either mentally ill or have some sort of illness or drug addicted, which means that they incorporate harm reduction. Harm reduction is where they supply you with clean syringes, cookers, water, and rubbers, condoms, right, for this aspect. Now, what I'm trying to do is incorporate...
You'll have no harm reduction in your building.
Absolutely no harm reduction in what I'm trying to incorporate. Because I am trying to incorporate buildings for the people that are trying to make a difference in their own lives, trying to better their lives, trying to get themselves back into the workforce. Now, when you're living in a building that has harm reduction, you have noise 24/7. There's no point, there's not even a chance for anybody having a good 8 hours sleep. And this way here, you become aggressive, annoyed. You can't even go back to school. If you want to even upgrade or even get back to get your grade 12, your GED, I mean, trying to study, trying to go home and have a good night's rest, it's next to impossible. And this is exactly what I've been working for these nonprofit organizations. I've seen, and I know what not to do, and I know what to do.
Lou, you've lived in quite a few SROs in the Downtown East Side, different for different under different organizations. That's why you're so adamant about not having harm reduction. But just to put emphasis on this again, is the thing about harm reduction, like you talked about tenants not getting sleep, when they provide an environment for drug addicts to, they provide syringes and sometimes alcohol for alcoholics, mm-hmm. Everything just goes downhill, and drug use becomes more accepted in the building, and you talked about noise. Yeah. And just a sanitary issue. Like you told me there was one of the SROs you lived in. I don't know, it might have been most or all of them, that the common room was a mess when you had harm reduction.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, when you have a common room and everything else and you have harm reduction in there, you have to remember one thing, that majority of the people that are using drugs are using, use the common room. They're either having reactions to the narcotics that they just inhaled, or if injected. Now, plus on top of that, they give out crack pipes and everything else, right, as well, and that's part of this harm reduction, which is ridiculous. I mean, what I'm doing is I'm incorporating buildings for the people that are actually trying to make a difference in their lives with no harm reduction. There's going to be plans set up so this way here, because there's a lot of people that are poor that have children. You know, they may have been separated or whatever, but, you know, to set up some sort of daycare for them as well. So this way here, the parents can go out to work and they can come back and they have their children, they can have visitations and everything else. With harm reductions, you're not allowed to have any children because it's too dangerous for children to be there.
They actually get taken away if they...
That's right. The organizations will purposely make sure that the child gets taken away. And they automatically claim that those individuals that live in these buildings with harm reduction are all mentally ill or drug addicted. I mean, for those people that don't use, that end up getting moved into those places, see, you're not informed regarding where you're going to move into, because everybody's living from paycheck to paycheck. If you miss out on a couple, or you lose your job, right, and say if you get fired, you're no longer eligible for unemployment insurance. So whatever money you get, you end up paying your bills and everything else, and then you're out there trying to make it so you can pay your rent. You go and apply for income assistance, and next thing you know, you have to wait 3 to 5 weeks in order to get that. Then after that, you're behind on your rent. Next thing you know, you've got an eviction notice, and then you're out on the street homeless. You lose everything, right? Then you end up becoming into a shelter. And then you got these outreach workers that are wandering around the streets, right, telling you, oh, yes, we have a place for you. Move into one of these SROs. Well, the minute you move into one of those things, because you automatically ask, is it a quiet building? Is it safe, secure, and everything else? They'll lie through your teeth. They lie because, for one thing, ask them this. Would you move into that place? ask any of these outreach workers, would you move in? And their first answer is absolutely no way. It's too filthy, too dangerous. You lose your tenancy rights. You lose your Canadian Constitution rights. And you've automatically become mentally ill or incapable of housing yourself and or a drug addict. And that goes on your permanent record. And this is what I'm trying to avoid. There's a lot of good people out there that are trying to make a difference in their lives, trying to upgrade their lives, trying to work, and trying to become part of the society.
Yeah, in your new proposal for your nonprofit, your housing, SRO, so definitely no harm reduction. Also in your proposal, you want daycare. It's something the community desperately is seeking because, and a lot of the other SROs, it's almost if you're not drug addicted or can't be classified as mentally ill, then
you're automatically evicted. You're automatically evicted if you have any issues regarding harm reduction, because harm reduction is another cash cow for all these nonprofit organizations. Even church is giving out syringes and rubbers and everything else. Now, can you believe it? A church is handing out harm reduction, right? I mean, that goes totally against their beliefs, right? So with all of this harm reduction that's being given out, it's giving the illusion that it's okay to do drugs. You can walk around, you can smoke a pipe, you can inject on the street and everything else. And this is exactly what's happening right now, right? If you're going to be having harm reduction, have the harm reduction like the one that they have on Hastings Street open 24 hours. Don't have it open for 6 to 8 hours. I mean, how are you going to tell somebody that's a chronic user of narcotics, sorry, but you can only use it between this time and this time? I mean, that's a joke. No wonder everybody goes out on the streets and everything else. And then when you incorporate it into people's residence, right, well, it's a free-for-all. You've got drug dealers situated, established, inside every single building that has harm reduction. I mean, it's very rare to find no drug dealer within a harm reduction building, right? And yet, then after that, you have the problems with the staff, right, in these SROs as well, contributing, looking the other way.
What stage are you at right now? When you first put this proposal out there for your new housing, your SRO, mm-hmm. nonprofit, you got a lot of hits from abroad, outside Canada.
Yes.
But there's some other people too in the community that some other organizations that are actually interested in your project and helping out. Yes.
Well, I have I had a meeting with a person from Embers, and basically he was very interested in my proposal of having buildings strictly designed for the working poor and for the homeless poor. So this way here that they can start establishing themselves and having absolutely no tolerance with harm reduction, no harm reduction at all. So this way here they can get up in the morning, go to work, then after that when they come home, they can actually go home and sleep in a quiet, safe environment. I mean, with proper care, right, these projects can be working out awesome and great. How many people in this community, or let alone in Vancouver or in any other city, how would you like it to have buildings situated strictly for the people that are actually trying to make a better life for themselves, to go out there and to work, rather than having buildings being sprouted up and putting people with harm reduction into it? I mean, it endangers the community. It endangers the area wherever these buildings are sprouting up. By placing people with harm reduction into residential areas, right, it's going to create more havoc. There's going to be more theft. It's going to be more on the police force. It's going to be it's just going to be a lot of drain on the society and on the community. And then after that, with the people that do use harm reductions, they can't really take care of themselves. So then after that, you're going to have to do all these pilot projects for food, for resources, you know, for their mental health, right? All of this aspect, right? Make sure that they're on proper medication as well, right? It's just going to be more. I mean, right now we've got it localized, but it's spreading. You got these nonprofit organizations starting up all these different places. I mean, and you're going to have all these communities fighting City Hall, right? Saying, no, we don't want this happening in our neighborhood. Okay, we've already have it here in the downtown east side, but from the downtown east side, we can start bettering the community and separating the people that are actually trying to do good. Because for one thing, in the shelters, you find more people there that don't use drugs, that are out there every day looking for work. And those are the ones that I'm trying to grab, right? Those are the ones that I will try to house, to start establishing their lives, to get better. So this way here, they can start becoming in the workforce. They can get off of income assistance. They can start, progressing and moving on with their lives. I mean, sometimes it'll take a year. Sometimes it takes 5 years for these people to get established. You have to realize that people in the downtown east side have been so stigmatized by their postal code, you know, for even getting them jobs, right? Now, with other small little organizations and groups out here, right, that'll actually help the people to get work, and this is exactly what I want to be partners with. The people that are out there that are trying to help the people that want to be helped. Because a lot of people down here expect things. The food quality that people are being given in the downtown east side, it's not sufficient. I mean, sure, it might be sufficient for them just to keep going day by day, but it's not sufficient for them to have a proper dietary meal in order for them, so this way here they can go out and look for work.
Yeah, nutrition is definitely an issue here in the east side. Also in your new housing, you know, no harm reduction, you propose a daycare, and your kitchen. Yeah, how are you going to go about that so people get the proper nutrition?
Well, basically I was planning on having community kitchen within the buildings, right? Now, considering that majority of the people will be out there looking for work and working, now what we're going to try to implicate is trying to get, you know, proper healthy foods. When people go out looking for work, at least they'll have something warm to eat, nice good breakfast, and have a bag lunch. So this way here that they can go out, look for work. When they come back from their job searches or from their working, because all these organizations out here for the free foods is strictly designed to keep people in this neighborhood between the day, in the working hours. So there's up, and you never know what you're going to get from the free meals that are being handed out here. Now, if people have a good balanced meal, they can go out to work. And if they end up getting a job and working, well, it's still going to take 3 weeks to about a month and a half before they start getting established and set up. So we incorporate like having the meals set up for them, right? But, like sandwiches and something, some fruits and vegetables. Fruits and vegetables are one of the key most important things that has to be given out, right? So this way here, they get the vitamins and nutritions for them to continue going to work, right? Because majority of the people that are out there looking for work, like the homeless poor that are living in shelters, every morning they go out and look for work. They go and they'll be on Cash Corner or day labor ready, right? They'll go out there, so then they get jobs, they'll work, they'll make between $50 to $80 for that day. By the time they finish work, they have to go and get that check cashed, and that gets deducted. Then when they do end up coming back to the shelters or towards the shelters, majority of all the free food places are already shut down. So they have to go out and buy their own food. By the time the next morning comes up, they might have about $10 or $20 left, right? Then they have to pay for their own transportation again to get to these places. So you're looking at anywhere between, let's see, okay, it's $250, $275 now for the bus, right, for only one zone. Some of these jobs are in Surrey, and they have to go there by bus. So you're looking at two zones, three zones, right, where you're looking at least $7-$8, right? So there goes their money again.
It's definitely a vicious cycle. We're actually going through the process now of getting your buildings and getting funding. But that's also one aspect you're working on. Is it okay to talk about that, or too early about for your kitchen and providing light?
It's still a little bit early because, for one thing, I'm still working on the society name, still trying to get the board of directors, right? Once I get the complete set of people, I've already been talking with doctors, nutritionists, right? I'm trying to get them to be part of the board as well. I'm trying to get some of the people in the Downtown East Side to be on the board, but people that are actually interested in trying to help the people, not the people that just want to kick back or just want to have their name for an organization that they think it's doing good. I want people to get involved, right? I want, I just want a lot more for the people that are trying to make a difference, because the people that are trying to make a difference for themselves are the ones that are being totally ridiculed and basically ignored in this community, right? You take a look what's out there. It's all designed for people with addictions or mental issues. There's what's out here for people that are trying to better themselves. The only organization that I found in this community that's actually trying to make it better for the people is Embers. Embers is an organization that actually helps people to find work and gives them the opportunity, regardless of their situation, regardless of where they came from, right? These are the biggest issues, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about people who have wanted to get involved with your organization, and you're still in the process of getting your funding. If the listeners would like more information on how to get involved, is there a site you have up, a blog?
Basically, you can always contact me through my Facebook, Ludvik, Skalicki, Skalicky. And through there, just add me on Facebook. I accept everybody as friends. We can talk online, and we can get everything all set up. I work for a nonprofit organization right now, so I know exactly what people are going through and what has to be changed, right, for my organization. Thank you.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM and online at www.cgsf.ca. Wait alone all night. Just wait
without a fight. Right now we are here with members of the band playing tonight at the Bourbon Sunday night Juno Fest. Darker the Sky band members. Keyboard player
Brandon.
Bass player
Jason.
And drummer for Darker the Sky,
Chris, for Darker the Sky.
And last but not least, Robin Young.
How's it going?
Great. Thanks for taking the time to do this interview. You guys are playing tonight. You guys have been really, really working hard in studio. You had your MySpace out early last year.
Yeah.
You have an album now. But you guys really worked hard on, before playing your first official gig tonight, you guys really wanted to make sure you were ready and had the right members. And how does it feel to finally be playing? Having all the band members, you have them selected, you're ready to go out there and...
It's very exciting. It's almost like a weight's been taken off our shoulders. Robin and I started this band probably over 2 years ago. And it took us this long to just get to the point where we're really happy with it, and we found the right guys and right instrumentation, and we're ready to, you know, take it to the public now.
It all started with Robin. You were a solo artist. You kind of had your own style, and what was behind your decision to seek out a band, to play in a full band, as opposed to remaining a solo artist?
Actually, Chris found me through MySpace. I had a song called Space, and Chris found me, contacted me, and we got together for coffee, and about 4 months later, we were starting to play. We're actually playing the song Space tonight.
I heard the story of how Chris, you found Robin. You know, I'm standing between you two, among the four of you, but there's kind of this aura about around the founding band members, Robin Young, vocal, lead vocal, guitars, and Chris, the drummer. There's, you know, I've heard the stories, but can you just fill us in on your background, what was happening? You're online, and then How'd you come across Robin's music?
Good question. You know what? I don't even remember the details, but I know that I was just going through MySpace, and one page led to another, and I found this amazing song called Space by Robin Young, and I thought, wow, this is really, really good. And then I noticed that he was from Vancouver, not only Vancouver, but North Vancouver, and I thought, there's no way. I got to get in touch with this guy. This is just amazing, you know? And so I guess you'd say I've been a fan of his music before we even started a band together. And that was a couple of years ago, and it was just by chance. It just randomly, you know, sort of came out of nowhere. And here we are, full band, plenty of songs, and 2 years later.
The first two samples you had, or I should say the demo you had on your MySpace, you put that out last year? Was that a year and a half ago?
It was about a year ago.
A couple of different members early on, before it was even known as Darker the Sky, had Andrew Fuller on bass, who I've played with before throughout the years. And we had a guy named Andrew West on guitar. And we went through just a bunch of different configurations, you know, with band members and different instrumentation, and it all came down to this. We have guitar, vocals, keyboards, bass, and drums, you know. There's a lot of talk of whether or not we should get another guitarist, but it's a pretty neat sound that we have. It's very, very atmospheric and big, huge, you know, without needing two or three guitars. You know, we can do it with just bass, keys, and one guitar. So we're pretty happy with it.
Right away with those two samples you had, when you guys found each other, Robin Young and then Chris, and you were going through that phase of finding different band members, right away you noticed how your sound was enriched. Like the original song you had, Be For Me, and then the Dark of the Sky version, in that when it was in your band was in its infancy. Yeah, right away it had that, it was enriched, it had that extra flavor. And then what happened? What were you guys looking for? You guys needed a keyboard player. You needed a bass player. What specifically were you looking for?
I have always thought big. I've never thought the small picture. And the music that I've always written has always been very dynamic, and we needed to capture that. And we needed to capture that in an honest way. And Brandon came on, actually playing bass in the beginning, and he started playing keys, and he's phenomenal. His understanding of what it is that this band needs is perfect, and that's why he's in the band, and Chris and I have been putting this together for a long time, and I couldn't ask for a better keyboard player. He's phenomenal with what it is that he does, textural-wise. Incredible. And then Jason came on playing bass and, like, singing harmony with me. It's fantastic. His bass playing is so great because we also needed someone who can play dynamically, with adding a little bit of grit to where it needs to happen, and also the parts where you just know where you don't need to play. Those are the parts that are actually, it's the music's between the notes type thing. And as a four-piece, I really feel we capture that really well, this true sense of honesty, and it's great. I'm really happy about it. I'm really excited to play for people today. I'm really excited. It's the beginning of a dream of mine that's happened for a long time, and I really feel like the four of us are really creating a bond, and I'm really excited for us to go on tour and take this to the masses. I don't look at this at this small schedule. I look at this huge, big picture, taking this all the way.
Speaking of bonds, Brandon, you roomed with Chris. You were living together, and then what happened? Chris approached you. You heard Chris playing with Robin, and
well, to be honest with you, I've been approached to play a lot of bands over the years, and because I don't have a whole lot of time for it, because I produce and engineer other bands for a living, and that's kind of my career. Although I did come from a musical background, and Chris and I had played in bands together, we, you know, we've always known each other over the years, and he's always sort of played me bits and pieces of. Some of the samples of music he's working on, and this stuff really appealed to me, you know. So he brought me down to a rehearsal, first on bass, and then I got fired off bass. No, actually, I didn't. But Chris approached me one day and said, you know, what are your thoughts about, you know, because I do a lot of my own material that's kind of ambient and sort of textural and that, and Chris kind of thought of, hey, wait a second, you know, that'd be a cool vibe to bring to Dark of the Sky. What do you think of doing that? So I thought about it, and I thought, well, let's give it a go. So I did, and the rest is history.
You started off in bass with a band, then you moved to keyboards and...
You know, seriously, I don't like the term keyboards. I think that's a terrible... You know, it just... I don't know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, that's what comes to mind. I just... I don't like that. I don't know, I think of Elton John or something. It's not really keyboards. It's more atmosphere, ambience, texture. You know, the same way you would approach a film score. You know, you're not there to compete. You're there to complement. And my whole thing has always been to be there but not be in the way. You know, to create an aura to complement the music going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the biggest problem. That's why keyboardists have such a terrible reputation. So right. So they should, because most of them are shite, in my opinion. And they take totally the wrong approach.
The whole the mindset, I was wondering if you could fill in the listeners on, like, for your position in the band, playing the atmosphere and textures, what's your mindset? You listen to the bass, you listen to the vocals, and...
It's funny, because I've been a bass player for most of my life, and playing with Chris is phenomenal, because he's such a great drummer, and he's got such a great pocket, and, you know, it's different, you know? It's going from a rhythm section position to... something completely else is different. So I find I'm actually leaning, not that I'm ignoring the drums and bass, but I'm leaning myself more to what Robin's doing to complement the vocals and the guitar work. So I'll mimic a lot of his melody lines that he's singing, and I'll try to, you know, refashion it a bit on keys using various different sounds. Sorry, yeah, I did call them keys, yeah.
Well, thanks. Not correct keyboards, correct not keyboards, keyboards, but keys, but, yeah. Yeah. Since yeah, we should just whatever. Come up with a whole new name,
a whole new terminology
yeah. for, you know, what that thing is that you play.
Yeah,
let's do that. So,
what happened, Brendan? In rehearsal, you started off in bass, then you decided it wasn't for you, then...
No, I didn't decide it wasn't for me. Chris actually brought it up.
Oh.
You know, I would play bass for the rest of my life, I guess. I don't know. He brought it up, you know, which was wise.
Well, four-string precision bass, he just said, no, get that thing.
Yeah,
well,
it's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know, Brandon is a great bassist as well, but not many people know that he is awesome on, you know, that board with all the black and white things on it, whatever he wants to call it, right? And I know that he has a really, really... deep understanding of atmosphere and mood and texture, and that's what we really need in this band. It's a very moody, textural, atmospheric, you know, dynamic band, and you can't really find many, you know, sorry, I'm going to say it, keyboard players that understand that, you know, that don't just, you know, want to rip on scales or something. So, I've, you know, glad to have him on keys, and we have a bassist who's amazing named Jason over here. So, you know, the collection is complete.
Jason, bass player for Darker the Sky. What happened? Who approached you? How did you find these guys? How did you get involved with this band?
I can't remember. I mean, I've known Chris for quite a while, and I played a couple times. Was it on bass? This is actually my first show ever as a bass player. I'm not really...
Yeah, he's playing bass exclusively for this band, you know. We played in a band together, we still do, called Imperial Playground, where he is the lead singer and plays guitar. So he's actually, you know, he tried out bass for this band, and it really, really clicked. So we're going to keep him on bass.
It's definitely the most fun I've had playing bass, for sure. But like our non-keyboardist over there, a lot of the stuff... I also try to get a little more sort of atmospheric. I try and create sort of pad sounds with the bass guitar, or go for some more of a synthetic sound as opposed to just, you know, your standard bass lines.
For any like element in the band, I guess there is that pressure, but for bass, it can really set the tone of or the vibe of what the band is putting out. If how you're queued up, or how you start off, or how you end a set.
Well, I mean, it's the first time I've actually performed as a bass player, but I've played bass for quite a while. A lot of my songwriting usually starts from the bass up, so I'm really sort of familiar with how, you know, building songs in that way. Playing with Chris, I mean, I've played with him in a few different bands for years now, and it's just a great match. We both sort of know how each other play, and really lock it in when we need to.
Plus, Jason used to be a drummer, so, you know, we really understand each other.
This just in?
Yeah. Just found that out last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Jason used to be a drummer, and, you know, he understands rhythm, so he's a good guy to have on bass, because, you know, the bassist is the drummer's best friend, so to speak, on stage.
Or worst enemy, yeah.
If you're a bad bassist, then, you know, I mean, the rhythm section has to lock in, right, no matter what style of music you're playing. So, I've had no problems locking in with him, and he's doing a great job on bass.
See, the thing is that with the guitar, I have an array of overdrive that I use, but Jason really brings out the chords with the bass. When he's kicked it in and it's going, with like full overdrive, just makes the band huge, huge. Total other element. Another element that we didn't have before. Never had that.
Your new demo, just produced, 4 tracks, Bite of the Star, Before Me, When I Was Young, and Before Me, the video edit version. How'd you collaborate on this demo? Like the writing? Who was doing the writing? And
well, I write the songs. It's a part that I've always believed in, is just sitting down with an acoustic guitar and writing. If I can make it sound great like that, and we bring it to the band, we can make, it's endless after that. Because you want to do spotlights where I come onto your show and I play acoustic, and everyone understands the song, it doesn't feel like it's weak. So that's the idea behind that. I can come and do it. The intro on the disc is a band, came in as a band collaboration on that one, but the songs are very personal to me, and that's why I write them by myself, about stuff that is really personal. So it's always done on acoustic, just by myself.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I noticed, Robin, when I saw you play, and I've heard other people say that was their first impression seeing you perform live for the first time, is you're very emotional. And when you performed at CGSF, some of the people listening that I got to talk to later, yeah.
Well, can I throw out a little, the website's up now, so darkerthesky.com, add yourself to the mailing list, and we'll let you know when shows are coming around in your city.
Yeah, actually, the next one is at Red Room next month, so that would be April the 22nd at Red Room, and that's going to be a good one. Got Whitfield on the bill with us, another great band. And the third band is yet to be confirmed, but it's going to be a solid bill. Great bands, awesome night.
Yeah, you guys have a kind of distinct sound. So there's certain venues you are targeting, like you're playing at the Bourbon tonight. And what kind of venue complements the style or the style of music that you play? Your sound is loud, so you want to play in a certain venue that has what kind?
In Vancouver, Commodore. Absolutely. GM Place, absolutely. Huge. GM Place, well, we're going to edit this argument out. But Commodore, absolutely. Headlining at the Commodore, great. Fantastic. 2 or 3 nights in a row, great. Let's do it.
How about the setup for the backstage lounge?
Might be a little too dynamic for that place. I mean, a lot of times we go from playing, you know, extremely quiet to extremely loud. And I think that the louder portions of the set might be a little too, you know, too much for that place. I like it, though. I played there many times. But, you know, we are very selective as to where we play with this band. We want to have the right room, the right sound, the right bands with us. It's got to be done right.
A big band needs a big space, you know. And I think the Bourbon is good. Obviously, we like to be playing bigger venues like the Commodore. It's got great sound. Richards would be good. Anywhere that's, you know, that can, you know, make us sound great. And, you know, right now we're just obviously playing shows that we can get on the bill for, and which is great. And hopefully, yeah, we can be playing bigger venues.
The band has a new video out. You're working on a video.
It's in the making, actually. We have a really, really cool concept. We have an artist that we're working with. Tron, who's great, he did our website, darkerthesky.com, and he's going to do the video for us. He's going to do a photo shoot. He's here tonight taking pictures, and he's like another member of the band, basically. And we will do the video within the next month or two.
Yeah, Troy, Troy Graham, you can check him out on the net. He is fantastic. Visually, he gets it. He's going to be putting together visuals for the band when we're playing live, backdrops. He really understands it, and I feel really blessed that we have everybody together doing this. It's all happening. It's meant to happen, and we're doing it. And I feel really blessed that everybody is coming together for this, just believing in this project.
We're just talking to band members for Dark of the Sky, your debut tonight at the Bourbon on Juno Night. And you have a special promotion for your demo, your CD, with a special $2 price for your promo CD. How long is this going to last?
Tonight.
Very limited. I think we made about 40. They should be all gone by the end of the night, and then maybe we'll look into making some more.
Yeah. We're just talking to band members for Dark of the Sky, Robin Young.
Thanks a lot.
Chris on drums.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a slice.
And bass player Jason.
Thanks.
And instrumentalist Brandon.
Dark of the Sky. Thank you.
Thanks for your time and good luck tonight.
DarkOfTheSky.com. www.darkofthesky.com. Add yourself to the mailing list. Come on, see us sometime. Come talk to us. We're really nice.
And there might be a special deal like tonight. $2 for promo CD.
Next show, we should have full merch. We're going to have T-shirts. We're even looking into getting some rings made, real silver rings, which will be a nice item. Very special. So it should be interesting. It's going to be a good show.
Here that was. Check out Darker the Sky. Check their MySpace for their upcoming dates, because there's going to be lots of treats, CDs, T-shirts, and rings.
And the official site.
DarkerTheSky.com.
Mailing
list. Okay.
Yeah. Keep in touch. We like people. We really like people.
Is Clouds of Analog will be performing this April 5th at Rogers Arena for the Canucks game. This is amazing. Things have really taken off for the band. They're the finalists or semi-finalists for the Cella Launch Project. That's on April the 12th. Wow, they really blew Robin Young, who's lead singer for Clouds of Analog and his band. They really blew everyone away the last night they performed. I've known Robin for a couple of years. I knew him when he was a solo artist. That's when I first brought him into CGSF then for an interview. When I had the Jambalaya, he did a live set acoustic. And then any show he had, I just showed up. And then he was in a band called Darker the Sky, and which is pretty much the same as Clouds of Analog. All I know is Chris is not on drums anymore, Chris Marinke. But I think everybody else is the same except for Chris and maybe one other person in the band. But new tracks they've had out. I'm going to be playing a couple of them. I was just actually going to look that up. Hold on one second.